This is the world of Salesforce and Dropbox, HubSpot and Evernote, a world unthinkable without cloud software services. Most businesses and consumers use SaaS every day to get work done. Driven by the internet and ever-expanding availability of bandwidth, SaaS has come to dominate our lives in a very short span of time. But developing a defining service, often ahead of its time, getting users to engage, secure funding, protect IP, and building a truly remarkable and successful SaaS is not an easy task. SaaS Stories brings conversations with the dreamers and visionaries who dared to think ahead. How they built their SaaS, genesis, struggles, trials, tribulations, and eventually success.
Welcome to SaaS Stories. Thank you for your time and for joining us on this session. I have a favor to ask. While you continue to listen to the podcast, please leave a comment or rating at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts from. I personally look at each comment and will give a shout out to each of you in our next episodes. It means a lot to hear from you. Welcome to the second episode of SaaS Stories. Today, we have with us Neeraj Ranjan Raut, co-founder and CEO of Hiver, a customer support tool that works right within Gmail.
So, you know, when we started that services company, right, even then the intent was to build a product. We ended up building a services company, right? So my intent was never to build a services company. It's just that we ran out of the little amount of money that we had. We could not raise money and we could sell the services that we could offer to, you know, make some money, right? And then one thing followed into another. And then we ended up building this small, but fairly profitable, lucrative business, which was, you know, paying us very, very well, right? Now, our original idea was to build a local search product, you know, something like Zomato or Quikr to some extent. Back in 2008, when you did not even have, you know, good quality mobile connectivity on your phones, right? So the idea was to build a kind of a reviews app like Zomato on your mobile phone. But then there were two problems. Connectivity was very bad and you did not have app stores. You had massive gatekeepers for every app ecosystem, which was usually your telcos, right? You had to get your app through Airtel to, you know, be available to Airtel customers. So there are lots of roadblocks and we kind of, you know, ran into one after the other over a period of 8 to 9 months. And we had started with a small amount of savings and that basically ran out, right? And then we basically realized that we have built up good quality skills, which can, you know, pay us, right? So Facebook apps were just coming up at that point of time. You know, Facebook apps was really new. And we ended up building a decent amount of expertise on that. You know, after that, we very quickly learned iOS apps too. And that helped us, you know, very quickly build a services company that employed, you know, 30, 35 people and a few crores in annual revenue, right? So that was extremely lucrative, right? So that was the story. You know, what happened was that it was a very organic shift from trying to build a product, running into lots of problems, running out of money, and then ending up building a, you know, services company, right? We ran it for a few years. And then at the end of it, I just could not do it anymore. I had to, you know, get back to doing something a bit more creative.
Neeraj is the CEO and co-founder of Hiver and is responsible for defining the vision and strategy of the business. With over 1,500 customers across 30 countries, Neeraj's focus with Hiver has been to empower companies to provide customer experiences that are more human and empathetic. Neeraj completed his BTech in Electronics and Communications Engineering from IIT Kharagpur and started his career as a programmer. He started Hiver to make email better at collaboration and customer service. He works closely with the product, sales and marketing teams at Hiver on building a world-class product and taking it to thousands of customers globally. Now, onto this surprisingly open and insightful episode with Neeraj Ranjan Rao. Neeraj, welcome to SaaS Stories. I'm delighted to have you on the show and hear about the story at Hiver. Welcome.
I'm happy to be here and I look forward to talking to you all about how we started the company and how we got here.
So let's start at the beginning. You were part of a fairly successful services company and you at some point decided that you have to create a product. So when did that shift come?
So, you know, when we started that services company, right, even then the intent was to build a product. We ended up building a services company, right? So my intent was never to build a services company. It's just that we ran out of the little amount of money that we had. We could not raise money and we could sell the services that we could offer to, you know, make some money, right? And then one thing followed into another, and then we ended up building this small but fairly profitable, lucrative business, which was, you know, paying us very, very well, right? So that was the backstory, and we ran it for a few years, and then at the end of it, I just could not do it anymore. I had to, you know, get back to doing something a bit more creative. And it's not that services businesses cannot be creative; they can be creative in many ways, but the kind of creativity that we wanted was just not possible in that business. And me and Nitesh, you know, who was with us right from the time we started that business, Nitesh is my co-founder now, and he's also a BTech from IIT Kharagpur, you know, same school. And we ended up leaving that business, you know, basically leaving one fine day and starting Hiver, which was earlier called Grexit. You know, so when we started the company back in 2011, 2012, that's when we were starting the company. The product was called Grexit, right? And then, you know, in the last three and a half years, we ended up renaming it to Hiver. And we also went through a lot of iterations on the product, you know, which we'll get into in more detail as we, you know, go through this conversation, right? So that's the story. So if you look at my background, I did my BTech in electronics and communications from IIT Kharagpur in 2002. I work for this electronic design automation company called Mentor Graphics. You know, very deep R&D role, very deviated from web and mobile. Chip design and VLSI and, you know, C compilers, etc. I did that for five and a half years. Then I started my first business, which was the services business that we just talked about. Ran it for around 4 years. And then I started, Grexit, which then turned into Hiver, and, you know, which Nitesh and I am running now. We ran Hiver as a bootstrap company for a lot of years. And then we are a VC funded company now. We have raised quite a lot of money. And then, yeah, trying to build it and scale it from here. Right? So that's kind of a rough, quick history of, you know, where we are.
Okay, great. So tell me a bit about your services company. What happened? How did you get into it? How was it funded? And you just mentioned that the original idea was always to build a product, but
yeah,
instead you sort of pivoted into services because that's what was giving you money. So tell us a bit about
that. So this is, now we're talking about 2007 or 2008, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. And our original idea was to build a local search product, you know, something like Zomato or Quikr to some extent. Mm-hmm. Back in 2008, when you did not even have, you know, good quality mobile connectivity on your phones, right? Mm-hmm. So the idea was to build a kind of a reviews app like Zomato on your mobile phone. But then there were two problems. Connectivity was very bad and you did not have app stores. You could not... You had massive gatekeepers for every app ecosystem, which was usually your telcos, right? You had to get your app through Airtel to, you know, be available to Airtel customers.
Right.
So there are lots of roadblocks, and we kind of, you know, ran into one after the other over a period of 8 to 9 months. And we had started with a small amount of savings, and that basically ran out, right? And the entire area was new for me and Munish Mansal from IIT Kharagpur, again, my batchmate, was my co-founder there. And Nitesh was also, you know, with us right from the beginning, right? It was just the three of us. And I think we ran it. We tried our best for the first 8-9 months. And then we basically realized that we have built up good quality skills which can, you know, pay us, right? So Facebook apps were just coming up at that point of time. You know, Facebook apps was really new. And we ended up building a decent amount of expertise on that. You know, after that, we very quickly learned iOS apps too. And that helped us, you know, very quickly build a services company that employed, you know, 30-35 people and a few crores in annual revenue, right? So that was extremely lucrative, right? So that was the story. You know, what happened was that it was a very organic shift from trying to build a product, running into lots of problems, running out of money, and then ending up building a, you know, services company, right? So it happened very organically. There was no abrupt, moment in that story when we decided that, no, this is not working out. We have to turn it into a services company. It just happened organically and very, very slowly.
Yeah, fair enough. So it was fluid and you sort of kept shifting because you had to pay your bills. You saw there were takers for your skills and so on, right?
Yeah, we just responded to, you know, what was going on, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It was just that, you know, I mean, let's just... And we're building something, right? The whole idea of entrepreneurship, you know, whether you are doing a product or... services. It's to build an organization, it's to build a company, it's to build a real business that earns money, right? And that was very well fulfilled in that business too, right? Because you're building something out of That company did not exist a week back, right? And that we built this company that actually has customers and earns money, right? So that's very, very exciting. And we ended up doing that. And then, you know, we enjoyed it for a decent period of time. And that was...
So what happened? When did you decide, okay, enough of this, I need to go back to the original thought?
So, no, what was happening was that even when we were running that services company, we wanted to do a product, right? So it was like, you know, this is kind of a stopgap thing. And we'll probably try to find a way to run a product along with the services company, right? We'll probably use the funds from the services company to actually build a product, et cetera, right? But, you know, I kind of realized 2.5 years into it is that that's just not possible, you know, because your services company actually generates money, your product siphons off money, right? So on which are you going to focus, right? It always inadvertently you end up going back to your services business and paying more attention to it because, you know, that basically pays your bills, right? Whereas your product is actually an experiment and it's never your, you know, primary area of focus, right? And, you know, I've seen that happen with lots of entrepreneurs when they have tried to balance a services company and a product company. Right? It just took us some time to learn that it's not possible, and then you just have to cut the cord and focus and take whatever risks you have to take and, you know, build something new, right? And that was pretty significant at that point of time because, you know, we've started from zero. We built a fairly decent business that was, you know, paying us a decent amount of money. And then you leave that and go back to zero once more. But then, you know, it took us some time to basically decide that that's the only way to go if you want to build a product. There's no other way to do it, right? So that's how it happened.
So you left the company. But before you even talk about that, you must be having this new idea that you wanted to experiment with and you were sort of your passion for that exceeds the passion for what you're already doing, right? So absolutely. How did that come about? How did this idea, whatever was the predecessor of Hiver was, how did that come about?
So that's a good question, right? So that was all based on my previous work experience at Mental Graphics, right? So, you know, one problem that we faced at my last job, the only job that I actually had that was a perpetual problem that, you know, we used to have a lot of, you know, deep, intelligent conversations on email. That was a primary channel of communication, right? And you'd ask hard questions. The questions would get answered over a large period of time, right? Mm. Over multiple emails in a thread, et cetera, right? And then 7 months or 8 months down the line, someone would come and ask the same question.
Yeah.
And then you'd be hunting for that guy who has that email that has that attachment that actually has answers to this question, right? But this gets played out or used to get played out very, very frequently in pretty much every workplace, right? And my learning there was that email inboxes are these huge silos where you have information that you know that you have, but that information might actually be relevant and useful in a larger context to everyone in the company too, right? And if you can do something to make such knowledge and information come out of that inbox silo and become discoverable to more people in the company, that can be pretty amazing thing, right? So that was the kind of the seed of the idea that we want to explore and we wanted to build something around, right? And then we just kept thinking about it, but we just couldn't make any material progress towards actually making it, right? And that is what we started with, right? So when we left my last business, we started with building this. We actually raised money for this and, you know, the company was supposed to be this. We actually built this. We started selling this too. But then we took some twists and turns and ended up settling into, you know, slightly different product, which is Hiver as you know it today.
Right. So when you started off, you are already raising money or you are again started off with your own money?
So again, we started with our own money, right? So we built a prototype and we got a decent bit of press coverage, you know. So at that time, you know, there was not so much startup clutter. So you could get the top publications in the US to cover you, right? So we just wrote, you know, cold emails to, you know, pretty popular publications at that point of time, like Read Write Web, and there are lots, right? The Next Web, and we ended up getting a fairly decent amount of coverage because, you know, product was interesting. That problem really resonated because email, everyone knows, is a big collaboration problem, right? Mm-hmm. So we built the prototype. We started getting some coverage, et cetera, right? Mm-hmm. And at that point of time, we did not raise any significant amount of money. We joined this Indian accelerator called Morpheus. No longer active. It was run by a really cool guy called Samir Guglani at that point of time. Mm. And it was a small accelerator which gave you a small bit of money and, you know, kind of handheld you and gave you some advice, etc., right? So we just joined that. It was a very small amount of money, just 5 lakh rupees, you know, so not really substantial. But then that was a lot of help because, you know, we were just starting out with something and we had someone to take advice from, right? So we just took that and we released the prototype and we showed it to some people, right? So, and then we ended up raising money, right? So then we also connected to a lot of people through our networks, etc., right?
Right.
So we just went around, we showed the prototype to people, and even before we had any customers, we ended up raising a small amount of money. Not huge. We raised around $130,000, so around 1 crore. But we raised that and then we went with that, right? So,
so this actually is in 2012. This you are talking of 2012, 2013.
Yeah, right. So that's the only bit of money we raised, right? And then we, you know, kind of bootstrapped after that and built the to a fairly decent amount of revenue and then raised some VC money after that.
Okay. So tell me one thing, that when you were building this, obviously you were not the only people thinking of this problem, right? What was the kind of competitive landscape at that point? And especially because you were targeting the North American market, I would like to believe that there were a bunch of other... You never targeted India, right?
No, we never tried. Even now, we don't... I mean, we have customers in India. We have some customers. Hmm. But we don't kind of actively see or actively work on getting more Indian customers, right? So we did not look at it like that. We did not look at it like a American problem or an European problem. It was an email problem, right? Anywhere people have emails should have this problem.
Right.
So we did not... localize it to some geography. We always thought about it as a collaboration or an email problem. So yeah, so when we did it, so you know, I mean, if you look at the initial idea of, you know, Grexit, which was turning email into knowledge bases, right? There was no one doing it at that point of time. You know, I mean, that is probably why we had to switch to something else, because, you know, I mean, when there is no other competitor and there is absolutely no one doing something like that, that is usually a red flag, because, you know, someone has realized before you that it's not worth doing. So, you know, there were multiple problems, but then who is it a real problem for? If you, you know, knowledge management or knowledge base creation is usually a problem for fairly, you know, medium-sized to large companies, right? And then they have the resources to solve it in a different manner. And then we were not very enterprise-heavy kind of people. We wanted to build a very automated, self-serve kind of product and business where people would come, search, and, you know, experience the product and buy it by themselves, right? So that entire enterprise selling focus was not something that resonated with us. And if you look at, you know, medium-sized companies and below, they look at problems from the perspective of, you know, sales, customer support, marketing, etc. Knowledge management is a problem area that does not really exist for them, right? So because of course existential problems, and and that's, you know, kind of the realization that we had, and we said that, you know, we need to shift out of this into some kind of a problem definition that is more urgent to someone who will, you know, come to the website, try it out and buy, right? So that's how we, you know, so the initial iteration of the product was still relevant, but we just kind of, and we continue to be an email, you know, email based product and company. It's just that we iterated on the idea to get to a point where we could build a company where the product was extremely self-serve and extremely low touch, right? That was kind of the core idea for us. You know, people should be able to find us by doing a Google search, come to the website, set it up in 2 minutes and pay us in 14 days, right? So that was kind of the framework around which we wanted to build, right? So it just took us a few years to actually hit the right product on that. But then when we hit that, it happened very smoothly after that.
So at the point when this switch happened, how many customers did you have for the original product?
So there was kind of an intermediate in that switch, right? So after that first product, you know, which was the kind of knowledge-based creation product, we gravitated to something that we called Gmail Shared Labels, right? So Gmail Shared Labels was essentially a product that let you share your labels in Gmail. Now you have labels in your left pane in Gmail. We helped you share that, right? And then you could use those shared labels to build workflows, etc., right? That ended up being pretty successful. And that had, I would say we had a few hundred customers globally. And we would have been making probably $15,000-$20,000 a month, which was for a team of four to five people, a decent amount of money in India, right? And so we're bootstrapping. We're just using that 130-140K that we raised in the beginning. And we ended up building this small product, which was, you know, extremely low touch and extremely self-serve, really simple, that people all over the world were using to, you know, do productive stuff on email and were paying us, you know, 25-30K a month, right? So that's where we got to. But then, we saw a pattern, right? The pattern that we saw was that people were using those shared labels primarily to manage shared email accounts. Mm-hmm. So what I mean by that is that you would have an email address like support@yourcompany.com to manage, right? Mm-hmm. And then you would create labels like, new email or task assigned to new, etc., right? So they would go through this entire manual process of setting up these labels, and then they'd ultimately use it to manage a shared email account, right? And then what we realized was that if you just turn this around into a product that does lets you do that out of the box, and it's just built for that and nothing else, that might just take off faster. And we might also be able to build more stuff on that and then charge a heavier price, right? So that's what we did. We turned the shared labels concept around into what we call shared inboxes now. And it's a much more expensive product than what it used to be. It costs probably 4 to 5 times more than what it used to cost in those days. We have really good customers doing really business critical stuff with the product, right? So that was the switch. So from that initial idea, we came to Gmail shared labels, which we had a few hundred customers for, making enough money to help us bootstrap a small company. And then we realized over a period of time that this can be better. And then we turned it into around that.
So now you had 4 or 5 of you at this point. And what were the roles? I mean, because you are a techie, your partner is a techie, your co-founder is a techie.
Yeah.
So what were the other two guys doing?
Yeah.
Was anybody doing marketing or sales or support? How was that working out?
Yeah, so we had one person in marketing, right? So there's only one guy. So the marketing was primarily owned by me and him. He's still with us. He's still with us for the last 6 years now. His name is Harsh. And we hired him, by, talking to a few people and, basically realizing that he was the best guy at that point of time. Really raw, really out of, fresh out of college. And but then he turned out to be extremely useful. Me and Harsh were running marketing. I was running customer support. Mm-hmm. And doing a bit of coding, and my co-founder with two, three other people was running all of the tech. So this was kind of the setup.
So when you
so there was no sales because all of our sales was
were you doing demos and all, or were you just self-serve that you come check sign?
No demos. Absolutely. Take it or leave it. It was extremely, so we made it really easy. It's still very easy, right? I mean, we still have customers who don't take a demo and buy. Mm-hmm. So it's built to be really simple, right? So you can be successful on Hiverr with your initial set of actions in 2 minutes without needing any help. Mm-hmm. So that was always there, right? So we did not have a sales team. We are not doing any demos. But the product was, really nicely built. And we had very good support, right? So, if you needed help, we were really proactive with going out and helping you, right? And there were a lot of automation. So, for example, there were lifestyle stages defined, and based on where we were, we would send you automated emails and all of that stuff, right? So we do that even now. But at that time, we just relied on that. We did not have anything else. So it was all in-house, it was all scripted by us. It was a very simple workflow, but it was very deeply plugged into what our product does. And we knew that there were other tools, right? But the thing is that, to onboard to any of these tools, there is a lot of work usually. You have to, hook into them. You have to send events. You have to customize them, build workflows, etc., right? And with us being programmers, it was easier to just sit down and write our own scripts to do it, right? We did not have very complex workflows. We had a simple product. So we ended up, building our own workflows to, do all of that stuff. But now everything is, we don't do any of that stuff. There are tools for doing everything. So we have offloaded anything that is not core to the product. Everything is done by tools. But at that time, we just did it ourselves.
Yeah, I think it was also easier for you because you guys knew how to do it yourselves, unlike a lot of other founders. So tell me, this couple of hundred customers that you had at the labels time, they were all paying customers, or some of them were free, using a free tier?
No, we have never called a free customer a customer. I mean, free guy a customer. A customer means someone who pays.
Okay.
So everyone who I'm calling a customer will be a free plan. We had some people on that, but I'm not calling them customers. So customer is only someone who pays. Right?
Okay.
So,
only after
we had those people actually paying us.
Only after they finish their 14 days and start paying, they become a customer. Okay. So today, I mean, if you fast forward to today, so this is happening when? When did this shift to Hiverr happen, in 2016?
So we shifted in 2017.
Yeah,
2017.
Okay.
Yeah. So at the very start of 2017, We completely switched to Hiver. We also rebranded the company. We rebranded somewhere around the end of 2016, and okay. we launched, you know, Hiver end of 2016, 2017. So after that, we are Hiver, right?
So how many of these the couple of hundred customers did sort of continue into Hiver?
So what happened was that you know, we did not do anything drastic. We kept the that shared label product open. No, we did not shut it down, right?
Okay.
But we said that we have something better now called Shared Inbox. Right, so that's what that gave us a pool of users to try out Shared Inboxes on very, very quickly, right? So and we gave Shared Inboxes to everyone, and we said that, you know, we'll help you set these up, right? And quite a lot of people actually moved to Shared Inboxes. Okay. Some of them were really stubborn and continue to be on shared labels, right? So we have shut down the shared labels feature. So, you know, Hiver still runs on shared labels. The Shared Inbox product actually runs on shared labels as an engine, but we shut down availability to new customers some time back, I think, or so. But we still have customers who use it. So we still have customers who just use that and would just not move to Shared Inbox. So yeah, we have let it happen. You know, we have not really been very aggressive with forcing people to come out of Shared Label into Shared Inbox.
Okay.
But then over a course of time, almost everyone moved to Shared Inbox. We have only a small number of people still ticking to Shared Labels.
It's time for a short break. In 2017, Hiver had around 100 customers. And I asked Neeraj, where was Hiver today, 3 years down the line? Neeraj explains how churn impacts growth and where Hiver is today. Stay with us.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. Right before the break, I asked Neeraj, what has been his growth trajectory from the couple of hundred customers Hiver had in 2017 to where the product has come today? Here is his story. And where does your... So I'm saying that you have possibly out of the couple of hundred customers you had at that time, say 50% shifted immediately because they found it easier and so on.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that beginning of 2017, you started with 100 customers, say. Where are you now? Where are you now 3 years down the line?
So beginning 2017, it was actually more than 100 customers, but the reality of small business SaaS is that, you know, churn is very high, right? So usually when your customers are small, a churn of 1.5-1.75% per month is usually not bad, because a lot of churn happens because they're completely out of your control, right?
Yeah.
The guy who was championing it in the company gets fired, or the company shuts down, which is happening a lot in the current scenario, right? So we currently are at around 1550 customers, 1500 to 1600, and all paying, you know, I'm not talking about free customers and trial customers and all that, right? So we are currently at 1500 1550 or
and
so.
And these are in what tier are they? I mean, you have multiple tiers, as I see from your pricing.
So most of the people now are on what you see put as growth on our website, right?
Okay.
So pricing also has had its own evolution. This new system is 3 to 4 months back. You know, we have experimented a bit on. But if you look at our the largest part of our customer base, they are on the growth plan, which is, you know, $27 per user per month, right? So that's where most of the action is. We launched a light plan sometime back, which is a cheaper plan at $7 per user.
Yeah.
And we do have some people buying it, but, you know, 80% to 90% of our revenue comes from that growth plan or similar plans to growth that we earlier had, you know, which we have discontinued.
Right. And how does it see? How did you, this couple of hundred to this 1500, 1600 number, how did it go year by year? So till by end of 2017, where were you?
So, you know, we have roughly doubled every year, right? So, so even 2017, you know, I would not say we are at 100. We would have been at slightly higher.
Right. That's what you said. A couple of hundred, I said.
But maybe 2 years or so. Because, yeah, a 200 to 300, right? Mm-hmm. But we would have probably doubled every year, right? So, yeah.
Okay.
We have roughly doubled every year.
When you say 1,500, these are all individual seats, right? Not 1,500 companies.
No, they are 1,500 companies, right? So, our total number of seats would be, you know, in tens of thousands. So,
okay.
The number of seats is pretty high. So, I'm talking about 1,500 companies.
Right? Oh, that's wonderful.
So, otherwise, 1,500 seats with $20 would give us this. 1,500 accounts, right? So, okay. That would be just $30,000, right? That'd be so, that'd be not enough to run the company. So, yeah. So, unfortunately, I cannot disclose revenue numbers now that we are VC funded and all. It used to be much simpler around 2 years back when I could, you know, very openly talk about numbers, and there are interviews that I've done where I've been very open about numbers. But it's just that, you know, that 1500 number is something that I can disclose, and that number 1500, you know, between 1500 and 1600 is where we are right now. And yeah, so that's the number of companies. Right? So
okay.
Number of seats would be much higher.
So tell me, what kind of marketing is actually, or what is, you're still self-serve, you're still basically driven on marketing to get the customers, right? What is really working for you? What is helping you double your number?
Okay. So, you know, one strong thing is that, you know, we have been fairly good with inbound marketing, right? So if you search for phrases and, you know, terms and keywords around what we do, you'll find us very quickly. And that actually has driven a lot of our growth, right? So we have been pretty good at attracting people with intent to buy what you know, we offer, right? That is one thing. The second thing that has actually driven our growth is expansions. So it happens quite a lot that, you know, we get a customer which is actually a large company, but buys, however, for a small number of people, and probably five or six. But then we manage to expand it to 10 times of its original size by working on the account, showing them more value, et cetera, right? So our growth has been primarily fueled by these two things. One, by our ability to acquire or attract customers inbound using content, SEO, et cetera, et cetera. And the second, that when we do get them, we can actually upsell, probably upsell is not the right word, but we can actually expand the account to get more seats in the company, right? So it's a combination of those two things.
So what would you say is your conversion rate today from the guys who are coming in through your inbound channels, through your inbound funnel, and signing up for the 14-day free trial? How many are actually converting today to paid customer?
Okay, that number is something that I can disclose. You know, it usually hovers between 15% and 20%.
Okay.
It changes month on month, but it hardly ever goes below
15%.
And it depends on channels. Yeah, some channels we might also be able to get 20. In really targeted, good quality channels, it's possible to get 22.
And so what are the channels you are focused on?
We have quite a few things now. Some things are experimental, some things are settled, etc., etc. Right? So SEO, content, you know, that is our kind of our strongest channel. We also do AdWords. We have a fairly decent ad spend now. It's not huge, but we do AdWords now, and that has turned out to be a fairly useful channel, right? Events, you know, in the Google ecosystem, we landed one of our largest customers, actually the largest customer now, through our sponsorship of a Google event, right? But then all of that is shut down now because there are no events happening. But that potentially is a very, you know, important channel for us, where we can get in front of important G Suite customers. The fourth important channel is resellers. So the G Suite and Google ecosystem has lots of resellers who actually go out and sell G Suite. And we have been, I would say, moderately successful with using that to ride on G Suite sales and, you know, kind of get our product through that sale too, right? We are working on it. We have someone in our company working on just that channel. But they are kind of, you know, all the channels that we have, right? I mean, organic / SEO / content, then paid marketing. The third being, events, and the fourth being resellers, right? So broadly, there are these four. There are lots of small other channels.
Sure.
For example, there are some forums on which, you know, our target customer base usually is available, right? There are forums for the internal discussions where you can advertise and do lead gen, right? So they, one of such forums is called Spiceworks. There's another one called CMS. They are turning out to be fairly interesting channels, because, you know, once you have good quality collateral and marketing material, you can actually do good quality lead gen, and then you can nurture them over a period of time and get them to buy, right? So yeah, so there are a lot of new channels too that we are kind of uncovering as we learn.
So what would you say is your cost of acquisition today?
I again cannot disclose that, but our recovery, our duration to recover the cost of acquisition is approximately 8 to 9 months at this point of time.
That's one number. Because people are talking of anything between 12 and 18 months. So I think you're doing very well there.
That's also because, fortunately, a lot of our customer acquisition is, inbound and organic based, right? If you really try to push it hard on paid acquisition, it'll not look so good, right? So which might actually happen, and when we have more resources, we'd love to spend more and get some more customers a bit less profitably. That's not really a bad thing. But right. how it stands now is at an 8 to 9 month kind of period.
Okay. For recovery. And what's your sort of lifetime value of a customer? I mean, are you looking at like a 3-4 years kind of? How long are they sticking to you? Although I know it's only 3 years.
It's more than 5 years. It's more than 5 years. If you calculate using our churn and all of that stuff. Right. So what happens in a scenario like ours is that the smallest customers are the most volatile. So we have lots of customers who pay us $100, $120 a month, right? And those customers are the most volatile customers because they are in scenarios that are volatile, right? The businesses are not very stable. A lot of time, the value that they derive from the product is not high enough for them to keep investing on it for a long period of time, right? But when it gets to a decent sum of money, at least 7 to 8K per year, right? After that, there is a lot of stability. We hardly ever lose a customer that pays us more than 7K per year, approximately. That usually does not happen. Once someone reaches that number, it only goes up from there.
Right.
So if you have to just focus on the smallest micro customers, 3-4 seats, paying us, $100, $120, there's a lot of volatility there. But with the customers that actually matter in terms of, growing over a large period of time, there's a lot of stability. That also aligns with a lot of what I hear from other SaaS companies, where they see that, larger customers have a lot more, stability and stickiness, unless something really disastrous happens, and that is not something really under your control.
So moving to the fact that you said that the knowledge based product did not have competition, and that was sort of a red flag, because somebody would have figured out that that's not something sellable or whatever. When you came to Hiver, how did the competition landscape look like?
So it's fairly competitive, but just that we have some nice differentiators in that space, right? So there are multiple angles from which you can look at competition, right? So what do people use Hiver for? People usually use Hiver for customer interactions, right? So more than 70-75% of our customer base uses Hiver for customer interactions. They would be managing an email address like fulfillment@yourcompany.com or deliveries@yourcompany.com or support@yourcompany.com, right? So now if you look at this problem has a lot of people trying to solve it. You have this entire set of companies that are help desk companies like Zendesk and Freshdesk and Help Scout, and there are tons of people doing it, right? So they come at it from a help desk specific kind of story where they say that there is a customer, there is an agent serving that customer, and then you have support tickets, etc., right? That's one way of describing the problem, right? What we did was that we said that, it's not an agent and support problem. It's an email problem, right? What you're going through is email pains where you're just getting too many emails and you want a solution to solve it, right? So we turned the story around into something that is extremely email centric, where people have an email problem and they need a solution for that. And the best solution to that is something that works out of email, right? So if you look at people we compete with, we actually do compete with a lot of, really established players in a very, very large market. But it's just that we have our own spin on the story and our fairly differentiated product that aligns with the spin on the story, right? Which helps us get customers in this, fairly large space. So that's kind of a summary.
Got it. But there is nobody who is doing it the same way that you are doing. Because I would presume.
I would say that, if you look at people who are trying to do, solve this email problem from inside email, we were the first to do it, but there are a few other, attempts to do it now. we are the most mature, most expensive, best built solution at this point of time that works outside inside email, right? There's a, of course, this company called Front, which also kind of solves the shared inbox problem, but then they solve it from their own email client. They don't solve it from your inside your email account, right? So again, right? I mean, the space has multiple players. It's just that we have our own approach to doing it, which differentiates us from the other players.
So how much money have you raised till now?
We have raised around between $4 and $5 million. Yeah.
Okay. And who are your investors currently?
Our investors are Kalari Capital and K Capital. Yeah. So they are our primary investors. We have some angels and, Vijay Shekhar Sharma, Paytm is one of our first investors. So, but the largest part of the money actually comes from Kalari and K.
So what next? What's your roadmap?
So yeah, the roadmap, of course, the product will keep evolving on its own, right? I mean, we have very, very clear ideas about what more it needs to do. And we can go really deep into this, email collaboration and communication problem from a customer interaction angle and make it 10x better than where we are, right? So that's a roadmap of its own. But in terms of, the market impact, right? I mean, if you just look at G Suite, it has, 6-7 million businesses, paying businesses on it, right? And we are at 1,500 customers. So the amount of headroom that is available is overwhelmingly large, right? So what we have to crack is how do we use marketing and, product roadmap to get a large part of this customer base, right? Because for a G Suite customer trying to solve this problem, we are indeed the best fit. And how do we go out with this story and get a lot of these customers is the problem that we have to solve, right? So extremely excited about being able to solve it in the next 5-6 years. So let's see how it goes.
And what other new ideas are brewing in your head?
So the thing is that, once you have done it for so long, all your ideas are derivative ideas of what you have been doing, right? So that's, it'll always be like a conscious exercise for me to try to think of something that is not aligned with what we already do. So that's a good thing and a bad thing. But if you look at email, right, we have lots of ideas of to make it better, right? So while we have looked at, email as a communication and collaboration problem in itself, right, anyone who uses email uses it in conjunction with some other tools. So if you run a manufacturing business, you'd use email to interact with your customers. And you use an ERP to manage your inventory and manage your production line, right? And how do these two tools play together? How can you make email play better with your ERP, right? So that, if you look at the class of tools that people use along with ERP, with email, that's a fairly large problem in itself. And I don't think anyone has solved this problem of, integrating email with other tools that people use already really nicely. Again, for every large problem, there are attempts to solve it. But a good solution does not exist, right? So that is also something that we'll start moving on, Q3 or Q4 this year.
And do you have any ideas of building this application which will work with, say, Outlook Online or any of these other email clients?
So again, it's extremely lucrative to think of that, but it's also extremely digressing because, managing. See, it's not, our tool is not like a tool that just uses the single sign-on of Outlook, right? It has to be extremely deeply integrated. The entire product philosophy will have to change, right? So it's not like a CRM which has some hooks in the back end to pull in emails from G Suite and Outlook. You have to go and live inside Outlook, right? And, if you look at the impact that it will make on both our product function, product plus engineering function and on our marketing is going to be huge, right? Because you have to talk two different languages. You have to talk to two different set of customers. You have to build two completely different products, which have completely different UI philosophy, et cetera, right? We have really talked about this a lot internally with our investors and everyone. And then what we realized was that there is more value in going deeper in the Google ecosystem, right? I mean, the number of customers that Google has, how deeply, Google is extremely deeply invested in Google Cloud, GCP, and G Suite now. It's a significant contributor to their revenue, right? And given that, and given the amount of problems that exist with Gmail and collaboration in general, it makes a lot more sense for us to use our limited resources to go, deeper into Gmail rather than try to solve more problems on Outlook, right? So that's kind of the thinking that is keeping us on Gmail. So I think in the next 18 months or so, or 18 to 24 months, I don't think we'll be making any move to get out of Gmail. We are extremely focused on staying here and solving this well.
And what kind of revenue targets have you got for this year? I mean, given the current situation.
So, you know, what we did was that we, you know, so good thing, you know, so if you looked at how we were in the month of March, when all of this was kind of, you know, getting started and no one knew what's going to happen, right? I mean, everyone is kind of expecting the worst, where you didn't know how much revenue are you going to lose, right? But then what we have learned in the last 2 months is that our customers are extremely sticky, right? I mean, it's not something that you can just do away with overnight, because they are using it for important interactions, and as long as those interactions happen, they need to keep it, right? And so the month of April was kind of iffy. We did not really grow, but we did not really lose a lot of revenue either. But this month has been going pretty well, right? So we have actually been growing this month, which has been a very happy surprise. And let's see, you know, so initially the idea, you know, when we started this year was to, you know, grow significantly this year, you know, basically multiply revenue by a good number. Of course, it's not going to be that good, but we are still expecting growth. You know, we are expecting that, you know, we'll end at a number that is significantly higher than the number that we started with. It will not be a large multiple of that. But given how the month is going and how the last month went, we are not expecting to grow. So that is one clarity that we have now, that, you know, we will be able to grow the business even through these times.
So when are you planning to cross, say, 10 million if you have not done that already?
So we have not done that right now, but I hope that we'll be able to do it next year. If this scenario goes away, right? I mean, if this scenario kind of settles down, it's not going away, but if it just settles down and the amount of impact is limited. No, because, you know, this has actually hit a lot of our marketing initiatives and sales initiatives, right? A lot of things that we could have done to acquire customers are just not available anymore, right? So we need a few things to start before, you know, we can start to grow fast. And I think it's perfectly reasonable to expect to hit that 10 million, target sometime next year. So let's see.
One quick question, that although your events are not working because there is no events happening, do you see the reseller channel, do you see any uptick there, or is it that's also sort of flattening at this point?
No, so, you know, the problem with every channel is that everyone is putting large purchases on hold, right? No one wants to buy a SaaS software at this point of time. Mm-hmm. Everyone is kind of, you know, uncertain about exactly what is going to bring, you know, what it's going to bring in the next quarter or so, right? So even the people who have intent to buy think that they'll, you know, it's not that the intent to buy is lost. Everyone knows that this is a temporary scenario and this is going to go away. It's just that, you know, the timelines have become deferred because people don't like uncertainty and they don't know. But you know, the good thing about medium-sized to large-sized companies, the companies that are 1,000 people or more, or even 700 people or more. I mean, there are people there who are thinking strategically, and there are people there who are working on this problem of, you know, how we are going to deal with this 6 or 7 months down the line, right? So there are enough people with intent to buy. It's just that the timelines have become shifted. So even with resellers, even with every other channel, even with our direct leads, we are generating leads, but the timelines of, you know, when they will buy has been affected. So that, I think, is a cross-channel.
Before we part, what advice would you have for somebody who is at the beginning of, say, 2017, trying to pivot or maybe building a new product in SaaS? What would be your advice to them?
So, you know, again, it will be extremely driven by our own experiences and what we did right, what we did wrong, right? So, I would say that, you know, I mean, first of all, you know, you have to build something that people really want. Otherwise, it's very, very hard. It should not be built on your assumptions and whims about what is important. You have to talk to a lot of people. You have to take a lot of feedback, and you have to build something that people want, right? But then you don't have to build it in the shape and form that people describe it in, right? So people usually describe it in a shape and form which is not the best way to solve the problem, right? So of course, understand what people want by hearing their description of the problem, but most often it is not a good idea to take their description of the solution to. The solution's description better be yours, because, you know, I mean, it's very easy to get lost in how people describe the solutions, right? So that's one, right? I mean, do definitely hear everything that a customer says about the description of a problem. But the description of the solution has to be completely yours. Otherwise, you'll not be able to build a, you know, if you're building a services company, that's a good thing to do. But if you want to build a scalable SaaS business, that's not a good thing to do, right? The second would be to, you know, work on, you know, inbound marketing, right? I see a lot of founders even now who want to start doing outbound sales. And that's a great thing. There's nothing against that, right? But when you build that pull and that magnetism of, you know, a brand and a website and content that can draw in people, that multiplies everything else that you do, right? That multiplies your cold reach outs, that multiplies the effect of your in-person meetings, etc., right? So I would say that every company, no matter what stage they are in, should invest heavily on building a brand, an online presence, content, SEO, etc.
SaaS Stories is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink enables high-quality interactions between buyers and sellers through presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create personalized sales presentations and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversation. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 990-216-3132. That is 990-216-3132.
Okay, great, Neeraj. Thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed the chat, and I hope that I sort of gave you space to talk about things you hopefully have not spoken in the past. Okay, great.
It was great talking to you so much. Yeah.
Thank you. And all the best. Thank you very much.
Same to you. Thank you.
Coming up in the next episode is another in-depth and data-rich conversation with Karthi Mariappan, co-founder of Hippo Video.
So we strongly believe in video is the next segment. So it was earlier sort of a trend for people. Now it has become an essential skill. So we see a bigger opening there. So we wanted to capture the mind share of the people. So we are strongly working towards that. And of course, all the video companies are working towards that. So we are pushing ourselves faster than that. And we have done a recent tech breakthrough where we could bring down the cost of personalization less than 12x about what we did earlier, which was again 5x less than we did. So such amount of cost leverage we are able to bring because of technology. And we are seeing a good adoption because of that in video as campaigns, except for mid-market or enterprise being on pause. But SMB has been a bigger trove coming into us. Lot of people are adopting. So I would say people have started reimagining what sales is. They are moving to virtual selling. And for that, videos is going to help them a lot. So we have seen a huge, you should say 10x adoption in our platform in the recent days.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes with great conversations with Rishi Kulkarni, Shruti Kapoor, and many more. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening. Thank you for being with us today and listening to this episode of SaaS Stories. This is where I speak with the dreamers and visionaries who dared to think ahead and built world-class SaaS products. We hope this conversation helped you with the insights that you can go and apply right now to your own SaaS journey. We hope to have you here with us again in the next episode of SaaS Stories. SaaS Stories is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. SaaS Insider, the definitive community for global SaaS, and is a BizCast original production.